The meeting will curate.
Okay, so we can start.
Yes.
No, it's fine. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Recording in progress.
Good morning, everyone. Morning, honorable members.
Morning, Chair.
Morning, Chair.
Morning.
We are about to start with our meeting. Members will be allowed to switch on their videos when they are about to speak. But I also want to let the members to know that I'm not in the right position. I'm in the hotel room because we are on public hearing. So I'll switch off my video, but I can switch on for a while to see that I'm with you here. But while proceeding, I will switch it off. I've been advised that we are co-reading. So, honorable members, today's agenda has been flagged there. I think everyone is in a position of seeing it. Is it visible? Honorable members, is it the agenda visible?
Yes, Chairperson.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The agenda item reads as follows: Chairperson's opening remarks and apologies. Then the adoption of the agenda, the lead department, which is the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, the implementation of Pillar 2 of the National Strategic Plan and Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, followed by the Department of Social Development, then the Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, National School of Governance, then SALGA and discussion. Then we close our meeting. Honorable members, ministers and deputy ministers, parliamentary staff, members, Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, Department of Social Development, Department of Cooperative Governance, National School of Government, SALGA, I would like to take this opportunity to welcome every one of you in this meeting. We are meeting here today for the first time since we came back from our local government election. It wasn't easy. It was hectic. But we did pursue our work in order to make sure that local government do happen. We are meeting here again for the first time without our DM, Dr. Hlengiwe Mkhize, the one who used to come and present for us or lead us from the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. We are going to miss her, and may her soul continue to rest in peace. Honorable members, we're meeting on the day of on the 601 days after our country has been put under lockdown. We're also meeting on the first day when the Minister of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability is launching a 16 days of activism today, where the department is saying they no longer want to talk about awareness, but they want to talk about accountability. I do believe that as a lead department, what they're going to tell us today is how far the other departments are doing in making sure that they implement or the account instead of telling us about the awareness. Honorable members, with these few words, I would like to welcome each of you. Let's feel free. Let's listen attentively in order to ask questions after the presentation. I'm going to allow all the department to present before members can engage the presentation. After all the presentation, that's where we are going to allow members to engage. Then after our discussion, we are going to close our meeting in order to prepare for our next meeting. Thank you very much, honorable members. You are all welcome. Can I get an indication of apologies, Mandy? Mandy, are you there?
Yes, Chair. Sorry, I was just writing the apologies. We received 16 apologies from Ms. Glodlo, Ms. Nkwane Mashabane, Ms. Pando, Ms. Mashekho Dlamini, Ms. Peters, Ms. Motoaung, Ms. Labaskachni, Ms. Christians, Ms. Briet, Ms. Fisser, Ms. Boshov, Ms. Klengwa, Ms. Ntuli, Ms. Soto, and Ms. Sisulu. Ms. Maseko Jele did submit an apology, but I see she is logged on now. She has logged on, so it's actually 15 apologies.
Thank you very much. We do have 15 apologies, members. There are the apologies. I do believe that we understand that most of them, they are also engaged in other activities of Parliament. Anyone to adopt for the agenda? Can I get a show of hands to adopt or to move for the adoption of the agenda?
Honorable Ngwenya, Chair, I'm moving.
Honorable Ngwenya?
I'm moving agenda. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I can see the hand of Honorable Judy Hemans. Any seconder?
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda as tabled.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We're now proceeding to the department. Our lead department, Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. I've learned that the minister is not with us today. She went for a lunch, hoping that the ones that are going to present for us, they are here with us. Can I get an indication as to who is there to lead the department?
Chairperson, good morning.
Morning.
Chairperson, in your midst, you have Mrs. Shoki Shabalala, the Deputy Director General. The DG is with the minister at the launch. She is the program director there. I will be the one that will take you through the presentation. But I need clarity and guidance, Chairperson. The initial request that we received made reference to issues that pertains to the National Council Bill as well. So our presentation talks to both around progress made in terms of the bill itself, but also specifically to the issues that relate to the prevention strategy. And when I look at the agenda today, it looks like one has to then zoom straight to the prevention and not necessarily issues that relate to the bill. May I be guided?
Yes. If you can present everything in less than 10 minutes, I can
thank you, Chairperson. I'll be brief. I'll talk at a very high level. Okay. Thank you so much. Chairperson, I'll take the next slide.
Apologies, Chair. Honorable Woman, you heard Drufin. I'm sorry to interrupt, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Drufin?
Yes, Chair. My sincere apologies for interrupting. if each of the presenters could show their video before they start speaking at the beginning, so we can see the faces, we can see who is talking to us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we do as expected? Thank you.
I don't know why is it upside down, Chair, but this is...
What is it that you are using? Is it
I have no, I'm on my computer and it's the first time it's doing this. I really have no idea why.
IT, can you assist? Ask
Comrade Bila, Honorable Bila Ngulu. Last time she had his hair.
She would not.
And I was worried that she was going to vomit. So I used to this.
I'm just afraid because I'll try and work on it and I will just mess it up, Chair. But this is me anyway.
Yo,
can we allow her to present without until they fix the mess which is there? Because yeah,
okay.
I can see you can vomit on Chief Whip.
Thank you, Chair. Briefly. I would like to indicate that the National Strategic Plan was approved by Cabinet. That was in March 2020. And thereafter, a legal opinion was obtained from the Office of the State Law Advisor. And they were advising the department to establish a council through a statute. And upon receipt of the legal opinion, the department requested the Department of Justice and Correctional Development to develop the bill that seeks to establish the council as provided in the National Strategic Plan. And that bill was actually developed by the Department of Justice and handed over to the Department of Women to further handle. And the Department of Women had worked on the draft and they have since submitted it to the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor for pre-certification and quality assurance. Next slide. And upon receipt of the pre-certification, the bill was submitted to the clusters of the DGs and it was gazetted for public comments for a period of 30 days. Public consultations on the bill have been held already in Gauteng, Free State, Limpopo, Northern Cape Province, and yesterday we were in the Western Cape. Consultations with the remaining provinces will then be concluded before the end of November. I don't know what happened. The presentation is now has disappeared. Thank you. Next slide. Secretariat, there was a question around Secretariat. What is it made up of and what has been their contribution to date? It's made up of a director, two deputy directors and an administrator. And they ensure that there is no delay in the fight against gender-based violence and femicide. They have worked quite closely with us as a department in ensuring that they facilitate consultation processes, including local government issues and making sure that they help us in establishing local multi-stakeholder GBV structures. And we develop locally based M&E plans and the assessments of the IDPs and district development plans for integration of the National Strategic Plan in relation to the GBV priorities into the plans. Next slide. Now, on the prevention strategy, Chair, I would like to indicate that our main task as a lead department is to develop a prevention strategy. The draft comprehensive national prevention strategy has been developed. Consultations on the zero draft prevention strategies have been held. A theory of change workshop was held, Chair. I've sent a revised version. I'm not sure why we have this one, but it was on the 28th and the 29th of September. And now we are in the process of consolidating the inputs from the consultations and the theory of change to produce our first draft, which will be consulted upon. The stakeholders involved are research institutions, faith-based organizations, the youth sector, the disability sector, LGBTQIA sector, the National Victim Empowerment Program, and government departments. We are subjecting the national GBV prevention strategies to the socioeconomic SAYAS, which will then be dealt with through the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, the socioeconomic impact assessment system. Next slide. Chair, there are some challenges, but In a nutshell, we want to indicate that the bill is now going to be tabled to NEDLAC and it will be subjected to the NEDLAC processes. But also we had to mobilize resources as a department to ensure that our prevention strategy is crafted. And we do have some time constraints and issues around the staff in the department. So we are working quite closely with development partners, in particular your UN Women, UNODC, UNICEF, and GIZ, because we do feel that there are issues that relate to substance abuse as some of the structural drivers for gender-based violence. Gender-based violence does not affect only women, it affects children, hence that's why UNICEF is on board. UN Women will be working with us on issues that relate to women. So it's a multi-sectoral response, including civil society, in the development of this prevention strategy. Once all is in place, Chair, we will take it to the relevant next processes at a very high level beyond the draft process. To conclude, Chair, there's a lot of work that we have done, even though we are not an implementing department, but we've reached out to the taxi association. We've done a lot of work in training the taxi drivers, working closely with the Commission on Gender Equality, the GIZ department, as well as Sonke Gender Justice, and the Department of Transport. We've trained taxi drivers, Eastern Cape, Limpopo, in KZN, in Gauteng, Northwestern, Mpumalanga, and we'll be training in other provinces that are to follow. But we've also partnered with the National School of Government for the development of a training program for taxi drivers. It's already in place. We will be commencing in Mpumalanga now during 16 days, and we will be rolling out throughout all the other provinces so that we continue to keep our footprint alive within the taxi industry on issues that relates to gender-based violence and femicide. That's it at a very high level in a nutshell, Chairperson. Should there be issues arising on this issue, we will then respond. But the respective departments have their own specific issues that they should deal with that are in line with the MNE framework that we are dealing with. They will be talking directly to what they are doing when it comes to the issues that relates to prevention work, Chairperson. I would like to pause there. Although, Chair, you did indicate that at some point we need to talk about the work that we are doing. I mean, whether the departments are there in terms of accountability in line with our theme. In a nutshell, Chair, in a minute, I would like to indicate that we are on track. Departments are reporting to us on a monthly basis. We are consolidating the reports from the departments and reporting monthly to the president. We have an MNE framework that informs the template for reporting purposes. And indeed, we have seen a good response from the departments. Now, all the departments are on board reporting. We are working with the Department of Arts and Culture. There were some few delays on their part in terms of reporting, but they have requested that we train their executive, and we've now trained them on the MSP, highlighted the key critical areas for reporting, and they too will commence with their reporting. I'd like to thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. That was excellent. It was on time. Can we go to the next department, which is Department of Social Development? I'm not so sure whether the minister is there. If the minister is there, over to you, Honorable Minister.
Hello, very good morning to you all. I hope I am audible, Chairperson.
You are, Honorable Minister.
Okay, thank you very much. Chairperson, I will request that I stay off the camera for now because I am in KwaZulu-Natal. I am here for a program on the GBV Victim National Commemoration Week in KwaZulu-Natal. So I am connected in motion. I prefer that I be off the camera so that I do not disturb the meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Committee on Multi-Party Women's Caucus, Honorable Kinsani Bilangulu, and also my Chairperson, by the way, Honorable Members of the Committee on Multi-Party Women's Caucus, Minister in the Presidency, responsible for women, youth, and persons with disabilities, Honorable Maite Nkwane Mashabana, and may I also say to this multi-party women's caucus, we work very well, our department, myself and the minister, on the challenges that are faced by women, youth and persons with disability. Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, Osisi Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, and again, I would like to say these are the women who have been able to carry us along in the struggle for women's emancipation and the empowerment of women, but in particular in the struggles that are faced by women. Deputy Minister of Social Development, Honorable Henrietta Bogopane Zulu, my deputy minister, honorable ministers and deputy ministers in attendance, Principal of the National School of Governance, Mr. Busani Naweni, and thank you very much. I participated in your good programs of the National School of Governance, and I do want to say to the women of South Africa and the women of the caucus in particular, it would be interesting to follow the different series that are presented by the National School of Government. And there's a lot that we can learn, particularly from their international platforms. Chief Executive Officer of the South African Local Government Association, Mr. Tolile George, senior managers and officials of the department and entities in attendance, representatives of civil society, private sector, academia, and multilateral partners, the women of South Africa in general, and in particular, young people of South Africa, if there are any who, well, they are, they should be in the Women's Caucus. We do have young women in Parliament. I'd like to say to those young women who are in Parliament now, when we started as women in Parliament, it was just the beginning of governance for us, and we didn't know a lot of things. 27 years down the line, I think the young women of Parliament, particularly through this caucus, can learn a lot from the history of when we started and where we are right now. I wish to thank you for inviting me to present to you the Department of Social Development's Implementation Progress Report of the National Strategic Plan and Gender-Based Violence and Femicide 2020 to 2030. While the department is mainly responsible for the implementation of Pillar 4 of the National Strategic Plan, namely response, care, support, and healing, I must indicate, honorable members, that I have added to this response, care, support, healing, and empowerment. I've added that because I think that we can have the response, the care, the support. We can also focus on healing, but I think we must focus more on empowering women to be able to stand up and be able to take care of themselves, be able to defend themselves, and be able to make the right choices for themselves as they deem fit. As it should be, the department also contributes in different ways to the implementation of other pillars of the National Strategic Plan, together with various mandates of the government. Here, Honorable Chair, I do want to indicate that the National Strategic Plan must not be lost to the work that has been done by this government, the government of the African National Congress, from the beginning in 1994, when we focused on empowering women, but unfortunately the ugly head of violence against women and children in particular started being much more difficult than even before, and therefore the history of the work that had been done before, and now the National Strategic Plan together must be taken together so that we can see where there is progress, we can see where there is no progress. Honorable Chairperson, please allow me to observe that the month of November particularly marks, among others, the work that our collective continuously carries out with respect to, among others, the International Day of the Elimination of Violence Against Women, the 16 days of activism for no violence against women and children. And as I indicated earlier on, I am in the province of KwaZulu-Natal, where they are launching their own. And what is very exciting here is also the fact that we are working in partnership with the Goodman Foundation, a global army of men fighting gender-based violence and femicide. The Disability Rights Awareness Month, the World Diabetes Day, the Universal Children's Day and the International Fraud Awareness Week. In that frame, this year's theme of 16 Days of Activism of No Violence Against Women and Children campaign is the year of Charlotte Manya-Magage, moving from awareness to accountability. And the accountability, Chairperson, I do want to indicate that from the department's point of view, accountability also starts with us as a department and our officials, myself, the deputy minister, and everyone else that we work with. But also the accountability is something that we have to spread as a word to our communities, house to house, street to street, community to community. Everybody has to be accountable on this action. Not only do we believe that there should be increasing accountability on all of us when it comes to our programmatic investments and interventions that are designed to mitigate the scourge of gender-based violence and femicide, the second pandemic that President Cyril Ramaphosa speaks about, the historical pandemic, if we're to be frank to ourselves, we are confident that working together through the district development model and in the spirit of the active citizenship, our targeted people, public, private, civic, academic, multilateral partnerships will incrementally be responsive to all women's lived realities and felt needs in all our varied communities. Therefore, the ultimate test to show to how we direct our investment and interventions lies in shifting these into communities where the people live. And as I have just mentioned, the district development model is the approach that we will be assuming to guide resources, prioritization and implementation now and onwards. Honorable members and partners, child pregnancy is a whole society's problem. We are appalled by growing number of unwanted children, child pregnancies in all communities throughout the country. This is a phenomenon that is socially regressive at many levels. Not only is it statutory rape, but it is also symptoms of weakened family values. The question that I keep on asking, honorable members, is that what kind of a man would make a 10, 11-year-old pregnant? What kind of a family would even tolerate that and not go and report it to the police? Because underage pregnancy, not only teenage pregnancy, but underage pregnancy is becoming a big problem in South Africa. And then our families, the most basic unit upon which our society is founded, need to be held back together for them to protect South Africa's most precious resources, our children and youth. In the same vein, men must play active, positive, and nurturing roles in their children's lives, girls and boys alike. Likewise, we must secure the vocational success of these young mothers by reinstating them in the schooling system and provide their children with the support that every prosperous citizen received during her or his childhood. Resilient families are the cornerstone and foundation of solid communities. Through our integrated implementation of the National Strategic Plan as different mandates of government, we will help strengthen the needed resilience at the level of families. And this will translate into increased societal capabilities and the much needed social and economic recovery. Chairperson, during the reporting period, the department undertook to strengthen existing response and victim care and support services in ways that the victim and survivor towards effecting recovery and healing. Meanwhile, we contributed to Pillar 2, which is prevention and rebuild social cohesion, and Pillar 3, justice, safety, and protection, which should be at the cornerstone of protection of women and children. Under Pillar 2, we carried out integrated campaigns at institutions of higher education, where we targeted social behavior among these institutions' youthful population. In similar ways, we led programs such as men and boys assemblies, conducted asikulume on gender-based violence and femicide together with Interfaith Sector Forum, as well as head village to village, wherein we targeted traditional authorities on matters that relate to gender stereotyping and harmful cultural practices. The department also supports GBVF advocacy work that is being carried out by civil organizations through our Everyday Hero and the GBVF ambassadors that we deployed across the country. Under Pillar 3, we developed and presented the Victim Support Bill to Cabinet. Cabinet recommended that the bill should go for public comment as well as Parliament's legislative passage. In line with our mandate, during the reporting period, we provided psychosocial services through sheltering services, the Gender-Based Violence Command Center, and the National Emergency Response Team. As expected under Pillar 4, in the past year, we increased the footprint of our care, support, and healing shelters to cover all 9 provinces. And now their number is 136, with a bed capacity of 1,687. Of the country's 52 district and metropolitan municipalities, 44 have shelter facilities. To support the growing number and complexity of work in this regard, the department developed 2 policies, namely the intersectoral shelter policy and the policy of provision of psychosocial services. We transferred additional resources to provincial departments of social development for them to appoint 200 social workers. Key among the assignment of these social workers is the handling of gender-based violence and femicide issues. I must indicate, Chairperson, here that as a department, we're working very hard to make sure that everyone else around us understands the importance of social workers so that they do not only become people who are supposed to be employed only by the Department of Social Development, but everyone else must, so that we can make sure that our people at schools and girls and boys at schools also receive the psychosocial support where it is needed. We brought 300 civil society organizations on board the fight against gender-based violence and femicide with funding of 100 million. We recently trained and assigned 100 GBF ambassadors who will be providing the relevant services in the identified hotspots across the country. The department conducted comparative research on the design of core gender-based violence and femicide interventions. The findings of this study will inform decisions of what works, where, for whom, how, and why. The challenges we encountered during the reporting period are as follows. 1, the funding of gender-based violence and femicide intervention is limited, especially for emerging civil society organizations. Funders still prefer established players at the expense of grounded players within communities. 2, some provinces do not prioritize funding the implementation of the programs of the National Strategic Plan. In 10, this results in inconsistent reporting by provinces. 3, we need to establish shelters in outstanding 8 district municipalities. 4, there are critical state stakeholders that are not participating in the relevant pillars of the National Strategic Plan. 5, emerging civil society organizations, especially those that are grounded in communities on gender-based violence and femicide issues, find the compliance requirements of the Public Finance Management Act exclusionary. And 6, there are limited services for the LGBTIQA+ population in strengthening shelters. Honorable Chairperson and members, my initial recommendations include the following. 1, from the national fiscal level down to the programs of municipalities of all government budgeting processes and priorities should demonstrably be responsive to the growing reality of gender-based violence and femicide in our communities. 2, all provinces ought to institutionalize and prioritize reporting improvements on gender-based violence and femicide work that they carry out in line with the National Strategic Plan. 3, there is a need to intentionally enhance the capacity of frontline workers, social service professionals, to enable them to provide effective services and prevent secondary victimization in communities. The legacy of gender-based violence and femicide presents us with the great responsibilities and opportunities to innovate gender-based violence and femicide responsive budgeting processes that will be relevant to the felt needs
of South African women of all ages. This implementation progress report is a reflection of our ongoing commitment that the women of South Africa, as well as the mandate that we receive from the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide 2020-2030. Honorable Chairperson and members, please receive the implementation progress report of the Department of Social Development on the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide 2020-2030 for your due consideration. And I think the Deputy Minister and myself will avail ourselves for further discussions or any questions that might arise. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Minister. I wanted to be tempted to say, can you please shorten the presentation? But because what you were saying to me, it was of valuable importance, then I said, no, let me leave it to continue. And thank you very much for that presentation and the update. We are proceeding now to the third department, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs. I've learned that Umama, Dr. Dlamini Zuma, is with us, with the Deputy, the Director General, and the DDG. Over to you, Mama. Hello. Dr. Dlamini. Honorable Minister.
Apologies, Chairperson. I believe our minister could be experiencing network problems. It's the DG, Avril Williamson, speaking.
Okay.
If you can perhaps then allow us to proceed, Honorable Chair, our apologies.
Who is going to present? Is it yourself?
Yes, I would be presenting, but I also just thought I could quickly check in the back end on what's going on. With Minister,
okay.
I also see some scratches coming onto the screen.
I don't know if it's only me that sees that, Chairperson. No, I can see them also.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. You may proceed. If there's something that the Minister would like to add, then she will do so.
No, thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson. I'd like to also then just greet all the Honorable Members. And if you will allow me, Honorable Chair, just to then turn off my video for network purposes. So we are here this morning to present to the Multi-Party Women's Focus and Steering Committee.
DG, your line is not clear. Can you try it again?
Is it clear now, Chief? Because we have tested it before the meeting started.
You can, but your voice also, the sound is too low. but there was another sound coming before.
Okay, Chair. So I will increase the volume of my voice.
Now.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. So good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. We're here to present the Multi-Party Women's Caucus Steering Committee progress that we've made against Pillar 2 of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide. The department has formed good relations with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons Living with Disabilities, as you would have heard in the presentation earlier on. The department is definitely paying serious attention to gender-based violence and femicide. Hence, we've also revised our vision so that we put our eyes on promoting safe and cohesive communities. If I could move to the next slide, please. So as the coordinating department, our strategic plan is also aligned to priority number 6 of the medium-term strategic framework. And over the MTSF period, which is 2019 to 2024, we are continuing to foster social cohesion and safe communities and ensuring inclusive and gender mainstream budgets based on the needs and aspirations of people and the communities at the local level. And these aspirations have also been cascaded down for the implementation of the principles that DCOP ensures through our whole district development model.
Mm-hmm. You are not audible. You were audible when you started, but now it's like we're losing you. Can you try something, please?
Is that much better, Chair?
Please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I could then move to the next slide, please. And the next one. So just with regards to the progress that we've made in tackling gender-based violence through the district development model, we have developed an implementation framework, and this implementation framework on the district development model has been updated to include the gender-based violence indicators based on the NSP. We have also then done this in collaboration with the Department of Women. In localizing the gender-based violence framework, provincial APPs I've also now included an indicator that will then monitor the number of municipalities that do indeed have gender-based violence-responsive programs. The local government indicators have also been extended to the BBBEE procurement scheme in empowering suppliers in that at least 50% of suppliers are then Black women-owned entities. Through our whole GovChat application, we have since received 751 gender-based violence issues that have been reported on the platform. And as we also know, for the month of September, there were 130 of these related to domestic violence, and 52 of them were based on physical abuse, and 99 on the abandonment.
Now shifted from your position. I don't know if there's somebody who can assist you there.
Yeah, I'm still in exactly the same position. I don't know what's happening. I hope I'm still audible and that I might proceed, Chair.
You are not. When you start, yeah, you are audible, but going through then.
Okay, so Chair, perhaps I should then change my device completely, and if you'll then allow, I'll go off the platform and then come back with a new device and maybe move to the next department, and I'll come back later, if that's okay.
Honorable members, do we agree that we move to National School of Government, then she will come back and present, because I don't know on my side only. Okay. National School of Government, are you ready?
Good morning. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
And can you see me? Yes. Thank you. I am ready. Can I ask, I'm also having a problem with devices and I've switched from my laptop to my iPad. So while I'm doing the presentation, I'd like to request if I can please switch my video off. Is that acceptable, Chairperson?
At least we have seen the person who's going to talk to us.
Thank you.
For the sake of that, you can switch it off. Thank you.
And thank you very much. Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Multi-Party Caucus, Honorable Ministers, DGs, and other colleagues present here today. My name is Bunny Subeda, and I'm the Director of Good Governance at the National School of Government, and I've been tasked with presenting to you the progress that we've made with the implementation of Pillar 2 of the NSP. So thank you very much for this opportunity. The NSG was requested to respond to the following two issues raised by the committee, and they are strengthening the delivery capacity of South Africa to roll out prevention programs and the challenges that we encountered. Next slide, please. Thank you. Honourable Members, the National School of Government activities fall under Pillar 2, which is prevention, rebuilding and social cohesion. I just want to touch on the NSG's mandate. The NSG is the training arm of government, and we have developed a suite of 5 gender-based violence and femicide, as well as other related prevention training programs to roll out to departments. And these courses that we developed are our contributions to the NSP for prevention measures. The National School of Government operates on a cost recovery basis, and departments are, if they want our training, they have to request the training from the National School of Government through our contact center via a quotation system. So, honorable members, it's important to note that while we avail this suite of courses and market them vigorously, we can't enforce uptake. We trust that the departments will come to us when they have capacity building needs with regard to the gender training programs. The output that the National School of Government has measured against is strengthened delivery capacity in South Africa to roll out evidence-based prevention programs. And I want to ensure everyone that the NSG has the capacity. And thank you, Honorable Zulu for, Minister Zulu for endorsing the courses that the NSG has. We have skilled and experienced facilitators who themselves are gender activists, and we are ready to roll out training programs throughout, whether it's virtual or face-to-face, throughout South Africa. In terms of the key activities, as I mentioned, we already develop content in the form of learner guides, facilitator guides, videos, case studies, tools, and approaches that can be adapted for different institutional and social contexts. Last week and this week, we trained the military veterans on sexual harassment. And as DDG Shoki mentioned earlier, we received a request. It was actually yesterday from them saying, we want you to train the taxi industry on gender-based violence. And the dates given to us are the first week of December, the 7th and the 8th. And we are ready. We are ready to proceed and deliver the training. So we customize the content and delivery to suit the needs of diverse groups. We ensure that our venues are accessible to accommodate participants with disabilities. And when necessary, we avail our materials in a word version format for participants with a visual impairment, so it's possible for them to convert the text to Braille notation. Next slide, please. Honorable members, in terms of the prevention programs, the NSG has developed 5 in total. It's gender mainstreaming, which is an accredited program, gender-based violence, gender-responsive planning and budgeting, sexual harassment, and then we launch something called Leading Change by Championing Gender Equality in partnership with the Department of Women last year. This is a combination of gender mainstreaming, gender-based violence, and gender-responsive planning and budgeting. And we offer this virtually because during lockdown and level 5, we couldn't offer face-to-face training. So we converted our face-to-face materials so that we could offer it virtually. Now, this is different from online, from e-learning courses, which are asynchronous, which means you do it in your own time. Our virtual courses are live. So even though it's not happening face to face, we treat it like a face to face session. We have participants go into breakaway rooms. We have facilitators and we have interactive sessions. So these are live sessions. We launched the 5-day virtual gender course in August last year due to the pandemic, and due to an alarming increase in gender-based violence incidents. There was also an urgent need for senior and middle managers to undergo training to acquire the technical skills for mainstreaming gender into their work. So the training is offered on a Zoom platform, and it's accredited with PCETA. This means that whoever attends our training, they have to submit a portfolio of evidence. And once they complete the 5-day training course, they take 6 weeks to complete their portfolio of evidence, because there's workplace application. They have to actually develop a gender mainstreaming action plan for their departments. And once they are declared competent, they are issued with a certificate of competence. The NSG also developed an anti-discrimination course. This is an online course, so participants can do it in their own time, and we're getting ready to launch that. So aside from the anti-discrimination course, all the other courses can be offered face-to-face and on a standalone basis, as well as virtually. Next slide, please. Honourable members, this slide, it's a bit small. Hopefully you'll be able to enlarge your email version of the documents that were sent, the PowerPoint presentation that was sent to you. But this slide provides an overview of the content we cover in the 5-day virtual course called Leading Change by Championing Gender Equality. So it's worthy of noting that we had high-level guest speakers on our panel. We invited the Statistician General, we invited Professor Tuli Madonsela, we invited the chairperson of the CGE when we launched the program. We also recorded them and we used their recordings during our subsequent training sessions. And we've had 13 of these training sessions in total. So in terms of the content, all of South Africa's constitutional and legislative frameworks and commitments shape the development of the program. We cover key concepts for mainstreaming of gender in departments, such as the social construction of gender, as well as looking at things like gender-sensitive indicators. Participants are taken through best practices, strategies, and tools for integrating a gender perspective in all aspects of their work. We spend an entire day taking participants through the ways in which gender-based violence occurs, how to identify and address patriarchal values and norms, as well as structural drivers of gender-based violence. Another useful area we explore is building the capacity of public servants to understand the importance of gender-responsive planning and budgeting. And we present as well necessary tools for gender-responsive budgeting and planning. Next slide, please. Here, I just want to touch on some of the key features of our programs, especially the five-day one. The course uses problems that officials currently face and case scenarios from real-life contexts to guide learning. We use videos throughout the modules. We also have learning activities that engage the learners. We support participants' varying learning styles. Our sessions are very interactive and action-oriented. And I want to emphasize that learning happens not through someone standing in front and preaching to the participants. Learning happens through dialogue. So most of our, all of our learners are adult learners, and we recognize that adult learners bring an extensive background of knowledge and experience to the learning environment. So we give participants an opportunity to share this, and we learn from them as well. So the materials are therefore being designed to be very informal, conversational, topical, reflective, self-instructive, and not heavy and textbook style. In terms of our curriculum, we adopt a human rights-based approach to mainstreaming gender. So the content espouses all the constitutional values. The voices that are presented in the case studies reflect diversity. We have adopted a very inclusive approach, and we have ensured the intersectionality of cross-cutting themes of gender, race, sexual orientation. We pride ourselves of making sure that the LGBTIQ A plus persons are their needs are reflected in our case studies and in the content. And so we make sure that the spirit of constitutional values of freedom, dignity, and equality are expressed in our content. So the one thing I want to assure honorable members of is that it's not theoretical information, textbook style. It's we translate it into practical exercises. And the reason for this is the Public Service Commission did a study some time back. I think it was in 2010. And one of the recommendations they made was that we have to use, and this was through the National School of Government, a practical approach to training, as well as having practical toolkits on how to operationalize issues of gender mainstreaming in departments. So we heeded that recommendation and incorporated this approach into the courses. There's a lot of emphasis on gender mainstreaming because gender mainstreaming provides foundational knowledge for understanding issues of inequality, patriarchy, toxic masculinity, and the social construction of gender, all of which we think is absolutely critical if we want to deal with gender-based violence. The course is paperless, and I think I'm ready to move on to the next slide, please. Okay, so this slide draws down on the content for gender-based violence. So it's worthy of noting that we help participants to identify the different types of gender-based violence, what the root causes are, as well as how to deal with it. We cover patriarchy, toxic masculinity, and the structural drivers of gender-based violence. So I'm cognizant of time. I'm not going to go down through to the competencies. I'm going to move on to the next slide, but all the information is here. Okay, so this slide is on the course that we developed on anti-discrimination, and it gives an overview of how we will help officials to address racism and all forms of discrimination, such as homophobia, xenophobia, discrimination that people face based on their sexual preferences. And this is, we're ready, getting ready to roll it out to all of SMS in all spheres of government, as well as SOEs. That's for the next financial year. And then the following financial year, we will focus on middle managers and the other levels. The next slide, please. Okay, so here I'm going to continue with progress. In terms of delivery, we have run 13 training sessions. So these are 13 5-day training sessions. We've trained 288 participants in both national and provincial departments. We've had high-level participants, DGs, DDGs, as well as senior managers and middle managers, administrators. We believe that it's important for participants of all levels to attend these training sessions, and we put them together in one group. So we make sure that everyone can interact with each other. And more sessions are envisaged for the next financial year. The course has been very well received by participants. We've had our monitoring and evaluation team attend. We had the Commission of Gender Equality attend for two sessions as observers. They monitored us for 10 days to ensure that what we say we are going to deliver, we delivered on, and we received very favorable feedback from from them. UNFPA also funded a session for officials with hearing impairment. I'm happy to announce that we had 10 participants with a hearing impairment, and we made sure that they were accommodated because they don't often get opportunities to be trained. So we piloted to them, and we would like to welcome departments. They have participants who have any form of disabilities to please reach out to us and attend these training sessions. We also recognize that participants, when they started last year, were new to Zoom. So we did an orientation session with them. We gave a guideline, an orientation guideline on how to use Zoom. And we did this before the training session just to make sure that everyone's comfort levels were okay before they came to the training session. The NSG just signed an MOU with SALGA to collaborate on various areas. And in the past week, we trained close to 200 trainers. We ran TOTs with them to build their capacity, because these trainers will be running induction programs for mayors and councillors. So we supported the capacity building of these facilitators. The next slide, please. Okay, so the next two slides gives you an indication of the summary of our participants if you are interested. You will see in the first slide, this one is the summary for 2020. And here we've had, just to point out to you, the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development, 41 men attended the course, because that was a recommendation made by the CGE that men are not gender sensitive in these departments and they must attend the training. It was first difficult to get them on board, but once they came, they really engaged and benefited from the training and really enjoyed it. Okay, the next slide. So this slide gives you the breakdown of all the departments and the participants for this financial year, and you will see not too many men attended, only 5. So the sessions were attended predominantly by women. Okay, the next slide, please. And this is my last slide, Honorable Chairperson, so I'm going to be concluding shortly. So this slide touches on some of the challenges that we experienced and how we managed to mitigate these challenges. So even though we ran 13 sessions, we feel that the uptake could be better. We wrote to heads of department. Our DG presented our programs to FORSAD. We have it on our website. We met with the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities. They are also doing a lot of advocacy, and that is why we will be running a session first week of December with the taxi industry, because of our partnership with the Department of Women and the advocacy role that they are playing. Another challenge is that departments, we've picked up that departments are kind of cash strapped. And so, when they request training sessions, they request it for a small number, only of about 20. So that is also something to consider. COVID has also, and the challenges that come with lockdown has also posed, problems. We've also had lots of power outages while we run the virtual sessions. but we managed to mitigate this by recording the sessions, getting generators to help back up. We run afternoon sessions, so we try to make it as seamless as possible. But once while our participants were in a training session in groups that were the breakaway groups lasted for half an hour, we actually had a power outage then. One of our facilitators, we had to quickly regroup, drive from one part of Pretoria to another part of Pretoria where there was power. But our participants, by the time they came out from their groups and they came into plenary, everything was happening virtually. It was seamless. They didn't realize how we were busy having little minor heart attacks and scrambling to make sure that that they didn't experience any disruptions. I touched upon that there was resistance from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development by the men, but we managed to overcome that. Eventually, the men did attend the training sessions. But one of the challenges is that other men in other departments feel that leading gender mainstreaming, gender-based violence, they feel that this is a course that women need to attend. So we need some nudging with regard to getting more men to attend. Honorable members, in conclusion, I want to say that despite legislation policies and our prevention programs and everything that all departments are doing, it was very disconcerting to hear this week that the numbers for gender-based violence for June, July, and August, the statistics that SAPS presented shows that it's actually increasing. So we need to do something extraordinary. There needs to be consequences for these perpetrators. And we need to think out of the box. And so NSG is trying to rise to the challenge. Something that we are proposing is we've seen that there's a culture of fear and silence in homes, on the streets, even in the workspaces. So we need to do something to break the silence, to encourage officials to speak up, speak out, break the culture of silence, and speak out not only in terms of gender-based violence, but all kinds of injustices that prevail, whether it's unethical behavior, corrupt practices in the department. So we're hoping to come up with this in the new financial year. And we will be very happy to share that the next time we are given a chance to report. So that's all from the NSG side, and we'd like to thank you for all the departments that have cooperated with us, and we would like to continue to avail our services and respond to your requests to have us do your capacity building training on gender. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Director. Mrs. William, are you ready now?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I request that our presentation be done by Siobelo Molefe. Thank you, Chair, so that we can avoid any technical issues. Thank you.
Okay. Over to you.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, Ministers, Deputy Ministers, DGs and colleagues. I'll be taking through to, from slide number 5, where the DG left off. This is the progress that we are highlighting in terms of the work that we are doing. I remember, as a coordinating department, we are expected to ensure that there is that alignment with the district development model. So in tackling gender-based violence through the DDM model, we have ensured that the model, the implementation framework is updated to include gender-based violence and femicide indicators based on the National Strategic Plan. And this we did with the Department of Women, Youth and People Living with Disabilities. We also ensured that working with the DPME, we also ensured that we localized the GBVF indicators by ensuring that all provincial APPs include an indicator on the number of municipalities that are monitored on the implementation of the gender-based violence and femicide response. Can you go back, please? Thanks. Also, cascading it through, we are also overseeing the process of developing indicators for local government. And one of the indicators in terms of metros is to ensure that there's triple BEE procurement spend on empowering suppliers that are at least 30% Black-owned women. We are also managing the GovChat app, which is an interactive app that is assisting us in ensuring that we have that interface between government and communities. And in that app, in the last engagement with the committee, we reported that there were 51 of issues that were reported that relate to gender-based violence and femicide. And currently we are reporting in this period that they have now increased to 751, showing that there is increased awareness and ensuring that these issues are reported. And also those out of those, they relate to domestic violence, 130, 52 on physical abuse, and also 99 on abandoned children. So it's important that we interact with the relevant stakeholders so that we carry through these issues that are reported on this platform for attention. The other issue is about us also aligning to the strategy. We have ensured that in our APP, we have indicators that talk to gender-based violence and femicide. One of them is that one of ensuring that there is alignment with the framework. And also we have another indicator that is talking to ensuring that the IDPs include gender-based violence and femicide indicators. Also to follow through, also we ensure that in most of our indicators, in our technical indicator descriptions, we are disaggregating the beneficiaries in terms of the targeted women for 55%, youth 55%, and persons living with disabilities on the work that we're doing through our community work program in ensuring that the beneficiaries benefit along those disaggregated groups. The issue on partnerships, we have also found partnerships with DWPD as well as DPME and conducted workshops on the alignment of IDPs. And on the next slide, we also reporting the issue of ensuring that once the WAD committees are formed, we also follow through on training WAD committees on gender-based violence and femicide. And as we have just held the local government elections, and we will ensure that there is training if once the WAD committees are established. Other interventions, we also worked with the Office of the Premier in KZN in ensuring that there is capacity building and mentoring for gender focal points. And these were rolled out in the Tekwini and Ugu municipality. And that those training also involve, were extended to community development workers as well as traditional leaders. We have also joined actions with United Nations in ensuring that we form those partnerships that will assist us in tackling this scourge. And in areas, for instance, in unlocking economic value chains, where we also prioritize the disaggregation of women in participating in those economic upliftment opportunities. the training of CWP participants on gender-based violence and femicides. And also CWP is also working on other programs in all provinces to encourage youth to stay away from alcohol and drug abuse and all other engagements, like, for instance, the sport soccer programs that take away youth from other areas that can spark issues of gender-based violence and femicide. On the next slide, internally, Chair, we are also adhering to those eight principles that would support the promotion of women empowerment and gender equality, and also are tackling issues of sexual harassment and ensuring that we practice proper adherence to regulations and the Batupili principles, and also in terms of recruitment and selection processes. And this also on the next slide show how the department is progressing in terms of a level of gender representation. As you can see in this slide, at the senior management level, we have 54% representation of women, while on the chief directorate level, we still have that target to reach 50%, as we only have 42% of women at that level. And on the deputy director general level, we also having 100% male, while we still have vacancies in those areas, but we are working on those areas. And at the DG level, we have 100% representation of women, also at deputy minister level and minister level. And on the next slide, this is just a representation, as and is talking to the same information that I highlighted earlier on the previous slide. So out of a total of 434 officials in the is comprising of females, and while we have achieved the 50% representation of women at SMS level, we're still working on improving at the level 14. Thanks, Chair. And this slide is talking about the upcoming events that we'll be participating on: the 16th day of activism, the World AIDS Day, and International Day for Persons Living with Disabilities. Chair, since we are two departments, I will hand over to the Department of Traditional Leaders, DDD. To assist us with the slides on traditional leadership. Thanks.
Thank you, Department of Traditional Leaders.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, members, deputy ministers and ministers present. Chairperson, I will continue from where my colleague has left off, to look at the role of traditional leaders on fighting GBVF. Sorry, Chairperson.
Those that are closer to you, can you please tell them to be silent so that you can hear your presentation?
I think Chairperson is on the other side. It's not on my side. I'm not sure where it's coming from.
Okay.
Okay. No, thank you, Chairperson. I will first take the committee through the role of traditional leaders in fighting gender-based violence. And I just want to highlight that Our constitution recognizes the role of traditional leaders in various aspects of socio-economic development initiatives, and that it plays a pivotal role in promoting freedom, human dignity, and the achievement of equality and non-sexism. As custodians of culture, customs, and tradition, traditional leaders play an integral role in educating their traditional communities about social ills and thus creating awareness on gender-based violence within their communities. And furthermore, they are very much instrumental in the promotion of human rights for vulnerable groups. And Chairperson, the institution of traditional leaders also is mandated to keep peace and promote unity among the communities. Despite the advances in women's rights around the world, violence against women and girls, children, remain one of the most pervasive human rights abuses, and its occurrence is in the homes or it's done by the intimate partners as its most prevalent form. And I must indicate, Chairperson, that during the lockdown, we have seen an increase in the number of the women who have been exposed to gender-based violence, and their rights have been violated. If we could move to the next slide. Chairperson, in fighting GBVF, traditional leaders collaborate with various stakeholders, and this include, among others, the Department of Social Development, a Commission on Gender Equality, Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities, SAPS, and SANAC, just to mention a few. And I just want to indicate to the members that in partnership with CGE, we'll be undertaking workshops on GBVF in all provincial houses of traditional leaders. And that will be done during this period of 16 days of activism. And also, the National House has launched the Men's Parliament together with SANEC, a men's sector. And the launch was to encourage men to fight GBVF. And I must indicate also that provincial chapters on men's parliament have also been launched. I mean, the launch happened between October and now in November. Again, Chairperson, the elderly are prone to abuse. And as such, the National House of Traditional Leaders, through its partnership with Social Development, and the Eastern Cape of House of Traditional Leaders, they were involved in engaging with the elderly who are suffering from Alzheimer regarding gender-based violence. As we may be aware that Alzheimer patients, they are not in a position of recognizing or identify the people who or the person who are violating them. So as the institution, they had to go on that a round of engaging with the elderly with Alzheimer. And again, we have got structures, women structures on the ground of traditional leaders. We've got a Queen's Forum, and in Free State, that Queen's Forum conducted a session with young women to raise awareness and discuss issues and dangers of abuse and violence. Furthermore, as they were doing those awareness campaign, they issued them or distributed dignity packs for them because most of them are needy young girls. And as part of equipping traditional leaders with information on GBVF, there was a webinar that was held whereby challenges faced by women traditional leadership, especially those serving in houses as part of their responsibilities, they were also that those the issues of GBVF was discussed, and they discussed the role of houses in ending GBVF. And I must indicate that our houses of traditional leaders are very much engaged in those programs in various provinces. Next slide, please. Also, in partnership with Alam Dutt Foundation, the PACs, Dignity PACs, were also distributed in Mpumalanga, and those Dignity PACs also were given to young women so that at least they do not depend on males to requesting that kind of assistance. And as people on the ground, traditional leaders also undertake awareness campaigns in their communities to ensure that their communities are aware of the scourge. And we have also mentioned that there has been a launch of Men's Parliament, and that has also filtered at a traditional council level. And some of the traditional councils, they've undertaken to engage in awareness campaign. And we have mentioned one of the traditional councils in Kuruman in Northern Cape, where this gender-based violence awareness campaign has been undertaken. In ensuring that traditional communities receive the necessary support, traditional leaders make available their traditional admin building as centers for support service to the affected individuals. And we may be aware that some of these centers are very far from where our people live, and that's why our traditional leaders are making those centers available so that they could just walk into those centers without necessarily spending money. And again, traditional leaders, they play a critical role in advising government on policy matters, and they also participate in various intergovernmental structures, both at national and at the provincial level. Our chairperson, acting chairperson, is part of a COCTA MINMEC, and the provincial chairpersons also, they are part of various IGR structures wherein they inform policies and the issues of GBVF are attended to. We have got a new legislation, Chairperson, TKLA, which also provide that any form of legislation relating to customary law and practices, that it should be given to or referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders for input. And most of these policies, they do come to the National to the National House, so that traditional leaders could make input, so that government is aware of what needs to be done. And in that way, traditional leaders have a say, especially on those policies that relate to GBVF. The next slide, please. In closing, Chairperson, we're saying we must intensify the fight for tougher gender-based violent laws, public awareness, and access to legal protections for all women, especially the poor. And we need to make sure that this is done or is tackled through the DDM approach in various districts, wherein our traditional leaders also participate. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the members of the Women's Caucus.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for the presentation. We're now going to get the last presentation from Salga. Salga.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson.
Good morning.
Let me also greet the honorable members of the House and the honorable ministers and deputy ministers present, and the DGs and the DDGs that are in the House, and observe all protocol. Honorable Chair, I am Nozibele Makanda, the portfolio head for Health, Community Services and Inclusivity at SALGA, and I wish to submit the apology of Councillor Maboa Boltman, who is the chairperson of the SALGA Women's Commission. She is in a council meeting that started at 10 as well. It clashed. And unfortunately, because of the transition in local government, it seems like all the other chairpersons of the provinces are also engaged in one form of activity or another affected by the transition. If the House so allows, I'm ready to present on behalf of SALGA.
You can go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will first reflect on the women's structures in the local government space. And the first one is the SALGA Women's Commission that was established to have more focused attention on gender work and gender focal work to support municipalities in mainstreaming gender and coordinating efforts to protect the rights of women to equal opportunities and protection against any form of discrimination and prejudice. The mandate of the commission is to coordinate, promote, and advocate for gender-appropriate strategies in municipalities, as well as to guide the functioning of the gender machinery in local government. The SWC has a presence in all 9 provinces led by the provincial commissioners who work in collaboration with the multi-party women caucuses across all municipalities. Basically, the multi-party women caucuses are caucuses in each of the local municipalities, and the chairpersons of the districts form part of the SALGA Women Commission in the provinces, and the rest of the chairpersons of the municipalities then become members of the meetings as they are convened at a provincial level of the working group for women in the SALGA Women's Commission. And so they lead the gender machinery work in municipalities and focus on lobbying and advocacy for gender responsive planning and budgeting across municipal departments, monitoring the implementation of the Employment Equity Act and deployment in council political leadership positions. And added to this, they are champions of the campaign against the GBVNF in municipalities and communities, and work with women's forums in communities. The gender machinery is supported administratively by the SPU under the office of the mayor, that is led by a member of the mayoral committee, and they advise the municipality on policy matters. Next slide, please. And then the special programs unit that is in the office of the executive mayors fosters inclusion by ensuring the vulnerable groups participate in the affairs of the municipality and that their voice is heard. Then the women's forum, which is composed of women from the community organizations that are representing the interests of women, are part of the establishment in all municipalities. And then they represent their key stakeholders and that are the voice of women in municipal programs. And they participate in the ITB forum of the executive mayors. And then they also bring to the attention the working with the multi-party women caucus, leading the interventions to prevent GBV and advocate for the support of victims through ensuring that the victim support centers are adequate and accessible, and that they also work for justice for the victims and comfort those that are affected by the scourge. Next slide, please. Then on responding to Pillar 2, SALGA has partnered with the Department of Youth, Women and People with Disabilities to deal with to assist municipalities in understanding their role in implementing the National Strategic Plan. And during the first quarter of this year, in partnership also with the Joe Slovo Foundation, the Deputy Minister, Honorable Late Professor Mkhize, may I saw rest in peace, honored and actually was the one that was leading the engagement with municipalities and working with SALGA. And the papers were for municipalities to start factoring the NSP, the pillars into the municipal plans. And the role of providing, again, added to that is the role that municipalities are tasked with, the role of providing a safe environment for citizens and as mandated by the constitutions. For example, street lighting, public parks, cutting bushes and providing safe parks, public facilities like community halls and multi-purpose centers. And all these interventions are necessary in prevention of GBV. And work has been done in partnership with various stakeholders and civil society organizations and sector departments. And to mention but a few, like the Moral Regeneration Movement, the South African Council of Churches sector departments and traditional leaders to intervene in cases of GBV in supporting victims in the courts and supporting families and communities with counseling services, prayers, awareness campaigns, and amongst other activities. Then strengthening coordination of sector departments and social partners at intergovernmental level to pull in resources is one of the programs that are led by the offices of the executive mayors in municipalities. Next slide, please. Then the multi-party women's caucus also with the women's forum in support of victims and empowering victims also work in workplaces now and dealing with issues of where incidents of GBV occur in workplaces and in various provinces where such incidents have happened. These forums were at the forefront to visit the families and communities and bring comfort and support. SALGA has continuous programs with her partners like SAWID, the Commission for Gender Equality, Gender Links, etc., to build capacity of these forums in the local space. And now with the NSG, with the programs in the following year, we'll be working to ensure that all women leaders are enrolled in the NSG. The provincial chapters of the SWC monitor the implementation of programs in municipalities through quarterly reports that are submitted to the SWC working groups in provinces, and then these are escalated to the national working group. And on the challenges, the municipalities regard the establishment of the multi-party women caucuses, which are supposed to be Section 79 committees, as an option. As a result, not all municipalities have established in the term that is ending these structures. As a result, the functionality of the women's caucuses remain a challenge in most municipalities, especially when it comes to resourcing and implementing their programs. And they have to write with the programs of the women's forum in the office of the executive mayor. But Chairperson, where the women's where the Section 79 women's multi-party caucus are established, then they are able to access a budget through the office of the speaker. Then again, insufficient resourcing, especially in the budget to execute the programs, results in non-achievement of planned interventions. Limited reporting and report not disaggregating data on how projects and programs respond to mainstreaming is also one of the challenges in helping to address the issues that have been planned. Next slide, please. On integrated development plans and service delivery and budget implementation plans, generally they do not reflect in most municipalities the gender responsive planning and budget. Hence the partnership with the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities to have this. And we're hoping that as we are monitoring such from March this year, we're going to be seeing results. And then leadership and senior officials at municipal level do not report on effective implementation of gender-related, specifically GBV-related interventions at municipal level. And currently, gender-related indicators are only identified in junior officials and not in the performance agreement of the senior managers. Then steps to mitigate the challenges. The Pillar 2 of the NSP is going to be fully implemented, and there is a need to ensure that the interventions are put forward are implemented. And this is going to be done as follows, that the National Strategic Plan on GBVF priorities will be integrated into the district development plans, IDPs, NED plans, and other municipality plans. And in this regard, COGTA is one of the key supports to ensure that this happens. And we are also monitoring as SALGA through reports to the working groups. SALGA will also support a process of ensuring accountability for the implementation of GBV initiatives. And accountability must start at leadership and senior management level. The NSP also requires that the priorities be included into the performance agreements of senior managers and leadership to ensure buy-in and accountability. And then SALGA will support municipalities to establish up-to-date GBVF-related policies and action plans in their institutions that are going to ensure that GBVF in communities and workplaces is prevented and cases are adequately dealt with. Next slide, please. Then again, the emphasis is going to be on the role of multi-stakeholder communities because they enable coordination and will enhance accountability of stakeholders in the fight for GBVF. SALGA will support municipalities to establish, convene, and chair the local multi-stakeholder GBVF coordination teams that have a purpose
of coordinating TPVF responses. And we'll also support and lead the process of developing local and district TPVF implementation plans that are going to specify interventions by the various stakeholders to be implemented in order to fight TPVF. It is only when these are there as specific plans that the stakeholders can hold each other accountable. We'll partner with the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities in the SALGA Integrated Council and Action Program for the new term of local government elections in ensuring that the new leadership is able to take, to understand the processes and as they are planning for the next 5 years, this is infused in the strategies. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Makanda. Honorable members, we have received all the presentation. Now we're going to open for questions, comments, inputs, or recommendation to members. Can I get the show of hands? I can see the hand of Matapelo, followed by Honorable Sibuletswa, followed by Honorable Velma. I see only three hands for now. Yes, over to you, Honorable Matapelo.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I don't know if I'm visible enough.
Let me check. No. Yes.
I'm not. Okay.
You are visible.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I've been listening to the presentation, and in one of the presentations, it was talking that one thing that was raised was that we are moving away from awareness to accountability. And I'm surprised that the people that need to be held accountability are not even here, which is SAPS. SAPS needs to tell us what's happening with all these GBV cases, whether it's public or private, because other people have been violated at work, and then they go and open harassment cases with SAPS. And I was hoping that SAPS would come also and make a presentation as to what is their plan when it comes to GBV across all spheres of government or all places of industry, whether it's public or private. From social development, I think it's an insensitive statement that was made by the presenter from social development. I'm not sure whether it's the minister or the deputy minister, where he shifts GBV or the way children behave or teenage pregnancy, particularly to weak family values. And I think it's very insensitive because some of us are teenage mothers. We had kids when we were teenagers. Does it mean that we did not have values in our families? Our families did not teach us values. It's a very insensitive statement from my side. And then we go to, I would also go to social development that most cases we get complaints from social workers or people who work in rehab centers of the harassment and the emotional abuse that they go through in their workplaces. And I'm going to make an example with one treatment center, which is the Northern Cape Substance Abuse Center in Kimberley, where social workers are not happy. And I ask myself, they are being emotionally abused, emotionally harassed. And how is it going to affect the patients that they're actually supposed to assist, which is a great concern to me. And shortage of social workers on school premises is still of a great concern because most of these learners, I was a teacher for about 15 years. I've dealt with most of these kids. And I was lucky that there were social workers that were willing to work with me to assist some of these learners, because we see the behavior of the child at school. And some teachers can do not have the eye to pick up that there's a problem with a certain learner, because again, there's no social worker on site to take the child to be monitored by a social worker who is on premises, which is of a great concern also to me. And then I'll go to COCTA. And I thought that COCTA would touch on the issue of initiation schools and the abuse that happens in initiation schools. What is the role, or what are traditional leaders prepared to do to ensure that the abuse that happens in initiation schools for both girls and boys, what are they doing? What is their role when it comes to that? It also takes me back to Amathwasan. What happens? Many Amathwasaners, they are being abused by their gobelas or whoever they are being called. And nothing is being said about those things. And those are very sensitive issues when it comes to GBV. I can clearly remember a case back in 2014, 2015, if I'm not mistaken, of a young girl who went to initiation and then she ended up being dead at the hands of an initiator, and it was a girl. And nothing is being said. Traditional, what's the role? Or what is traditional leaders' role, or what are they doing, or what are they supposed to do to minimize or to curb abuse in initiation schools and the ones that are being directed against Amathwasan? The involvement of the taxi industry is also of a great concern. Are we inviting taxi owners, or are we inviting the drivers, or are we inviting the marshals in the taxi? Is it compulsory for all of these people to be part of? Because you are going to bring in the taxi owners, and the people that are actually in the taxi ranks are the taxi marshals and the taxi drivers and the taxi association. And we are still going to have a problem that you are going to call in the taxi drivers, and then the taxi marshals are the ones that are being abusive. You call in the marshals, and then the taxi drivers are the ones that are being abusive. You bring in the association chairpersons and secretaries and the whole board, and the people that are actually working with commuters are the ones that are actually causing GBVF in our taxi ranks. Our women don't feel safe in taxis all over South Africa, not a certain particular area. So how, if we talk about the taxi industry, that they are going to be trained, who is actually going to be trained? Because if it's the taxi owners, then it's fruitless, because those people are just sitting at home waiting for money. If it's the taxi driver, some of them, they will come, some of them. Is it compulsory for all of these people to be part of this thing? And when we talk about accountability, SAPS should have been here to tell us what is their way forward when it comes to GBV. I remember correctly, I said, we need to get stats from all police stations to say how many cases have been reported, how many have been followed up, who are the people that are investigating these people, what is their track record, are they doing justice to GBVF victims all over South Africa? I don't know, maybe the report came in my absence in one of the meetings that are there, but those are the shortcomings that I'm picking up from the presentations that were done today. And then when it comes to SALDA, I remember clearly in 2016 when I became a counselor, we went to a some women's caucus and something and everything, and we specifically in Northern Cape, and all of these beautiful documents were implemented. And I asked myself, what happened to those documents to ensure that women feel safe? Women are being promoted in leadership in all of these councils. They feel safe. They don't get abused, whether by any person within the municipality itself. And now we are coming into a new era of 2021 to 2025. of new councillors, and we are still speaking about coming up with documents to ensure that our women are empowered, are safe in our municipalities. Those are the shortcomings I could pick up, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. The second end was Honorable Sibuleto.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation and say to all the presenters, we can see at least there is something that is happening in terms of having responsive plan on issues of GBVF. And one wants to applaud as well the Minister of Social Development to say indeed, some of us have seen her as the political principal in the office, being on the ground 24/7, 365 days, as she has committed. And I would like to as well applaud the fact that we have social workers on board who have been unemployed and been part of the transformational agenda for GBVF issues. And it's a gain for our country and as well for those who have been victimized by these perpetrators. One must say, Chairperson, I have noted with all the presentation that all of the departments, they've got plans in terms of capacity building. However, one believes that as long as these capacity buildings are selective, we won't achieve what we want to achieve in terms of addressing GBVF. So I want to check with all the presenters if they have any programs where they've got a program that would include all the sectors and everybody. And they must share with us, whether in writing or otherwise. Because what I can note and pick is that their plans, they are not inclusive. And I believe that you cannot select that you're going to train, for example, this one of taxi association. What made them to actually focus on the taxi association while we believe that GBVF is a societal problem? Do they have a plan to ensure that they cover everybody irrespective of the sector or fields that those particular people are belonging to? Chair, the other issue for me as well with all the entities is that fact is we can see that in other departments or municipalities, people, they are showing that they don't have interest in terms of GBVF issues. What is the consequence management for those who have been responding on these issues, whether be it on training or issues where they have to have programs that speaks to GBVF? What is the consequence management? Because for me, whatever that we've been presented to, you can see that some of the people taking GBVF as women concern or women development, it just shows that there's no interest. And Chairperson, where we are in this year, people have lobbied, advocated, have made awareness that GBVF is not a women issue. And today you still find a department delegating one person out of 15 to go and attend a training. And that particular person again becomes a woman. It must come to an end. What is the consequence management that where we see everybody participating to respond to this GBVF? The other thing, Chair, is with regards to the presentation for National School of Governance, I just want to check with them. Do they have a backlog as an institution that deals with development? If yes, what are the issues? If no, it's fine. It will be a mark. And I'm one of the people who have benefited from the National School of Governance when I was in the local sphere. And I just want to check if they do have a backlog, because there are things that one have went through in terms of the course, but till to date, I haven't received my qualification certificate, even though I could have complied with their requirements up until POE. So that is why I'm asking if they do have a backlog as an institution. The other issue, Chair, it will go as well to all the presenters. Timeframes for local governments here in terms of programs? Do we have where at least we can be forwarded such, so that some of us, when we do constituency offices, we are able to go and do our robust oversight to these municipalities that we are close to? So I want to check if they do have those particular time frame programs for the councillors, and any mitigation strategies in terms of attendance. Because, I mean, you can't be having a senior level official not attending such programs while we have noted that GBVF is a pandemic. So I just want to get sense if they've got a mitigation strategy with regards to that. And then, Chair, then this one goes to COP. On their slide 5, where they are indicating desegregated beneficiaries, I saw in terms of disability, people with disabilities, it says 2%. And one wants to advocate that when you do your targets, use all the national policies and the specific quotas as they are. Because now I know that for people with disability, we are in 7%. Why 2%? Moving forward, can they just use the 7% target for any programs, be it of procurement, development, and empowerment? Because 2% is still little. I think it still shows that we don't take disability issues serious. The other one, Chair, again on the SALGA presentation, where they speak about traditional affairs, I've noted on their conclusion, there's something that I felt that in terms of the language, it is not right. Where we are, it's highlighted on conclusion that their focus is women, all women, and they keep on emphasizing issues of especially the poor. No, for now, when you speak about GBVF, what we need to note is that everybody is marginalized or vulnerable. So they can just correct that so that nobody would say, but still, as you advocate for GBVF, you still speak too much of women. What about me as a disabled person? What about me as an LGBTIQA plus society? So when we do this presentation, more especially the national government presentation, or up until to the local field, let us check the language that we write. So I just want to say to them, they just need to omit there where they say, especially where they speak about women and especially the poor. They just need to indicate vulnerable groups and marginalized groups. Lastly, SALGA, I'm happy that all these women that are being sworn in, they are going to be trained. However, if it's about gender mainstreaming, can we train everybody who is the counselor? Can everybody who is the counselor go for the National School of Government with regards to gender mainstreaming issues? Because if we're going to just choose only women, we would be, again, you know, perpetuating this thing that GBVF is a woman's issue. I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Drinken.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to everyone on the platform. Thank you also to each of the presenters for their presentations. I would like to firstly focus on the NSG presentation, the statistics and the numbers of men attending the training is quite low. And I'd like to know, what is the NSG doing to get men to come for the training? Gender-based violence and femicide is not a woman's issue alone. It's not the women who do the abuse. And the majority of the abuse is done by men. So why do they not attend the training? So we need to increase that number, the number of men attending training. Secondly, I'd also like to ask then to SALGA, now that the new councillors are being sworn in, how is SALGA going to ensure that the men, the male counselors also attend NSG training. Then thirdly, I'd like to mention the terminology that is used. The terminology can be very discriminatory or discriminating or, you know, have a welfare perspective. So we need to encourage a human rights perspective or an empowering perspective. Where we use the word impairment, that is quite, sensitive to the deaf community specifically, because my hearing isn't broken. Impaired means something that is broken. Rather refer to a person who is deaf or hard of hearing. So we also need to be careful in the use of the terminology, especially with regard to the disabled community. Then I'm concerned about the increase in the number of children who are pregnant. I mean, there's no outcry. The children are underage. If it's rape, I would like to know if we can separate the statistics of those who are sexually active and children who are raped by children, and then children who are raped by adults. I'd just like a breakdown of those statistics. Then the NSG, in the training that you offer, do you also provide it to teachers in DBE as well? Do you also provide training to them? And also DSD and basic education. Maybe to discuss putting more social workers in schools, because teachers are really overwhelmed and they can't also see to the social needs and problems that are faced by the children. In the Western Cape, for example, Deaf Federation of South Africa usually sent deaf-trained social auxiliary workers to the schools every week. And I mean, the deaf schools, but it's an NGO's own social workers or own social auxiliary workers who go to these schools. And why can't these social workers and those kind of services be offered by DBE or DSD to see to the social needs and social issues faced by children within their communities? And also to the NSG, is there any training given to the judiciary? Because sometimes the judiciary, when they make rulings, they don't really understand that, you know, the violence that occurred is quite serious, but the sentence is light. So does the NSG maybe provide any GBF training to the judiciary? And I think, yes, I'm covered with all my questions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ngwenya.
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, let me appreciate the work done henceforth and indicate the seriousness of the fact that gender-based violence increased during COVID-19 pandemic. The technically training skills workshop that was done visually must also be welcomed. Chair, I have a few questions. One, I wanted to ask the question that how can we ensure that we reach the majority of people to get this kind of training across rural areas? Where most women experience GBVF and have minimum resources. The second question is, I wanted to check, Chair, that is it any way of minimizing the cost of the training so that it is accessible to even those that cannot afford? The third one, Chair, I want to check, how can we ensure participation by men or support to mitigate the challenge of women responding GBVF in their workplace for fear of victimization? The last question, Chairperson, I want to check, how can we align with men forums to try and demystify patriarchy in our society. Ngiyabonga Hlala. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Ngwenya. Honorable Van Schalkwyk.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, as well as the different presenters and everyone who's present in this meeting. I firstly want to appreciate the presentations that has been made, as well as the efforts made by the different stakeholders as they reported this morning. Even though we know that there's still a lot that needs to be done and each and everyone needs to play a role in this regard. Chairperson, I would like to speak to the issue of the high dropout rate learners in the basic education sector and the linkage between that versus your gender-based violence, as well as your reported incidents of pregnancies, especially with regards to learners between the age of 9 and 17 years, which is a point of great concern. So if we can try and collaborate in terms of that issue to try and minimize and see how we can eradicate that problem. Also, Chairperson, I would like to know what is the collaboration between the different stakeholders with the Department of Health, especially with regards to the impact of gender-based violence on mental health. So we are not hearing anything, and I'm really interested. But also, Chairperson, one of the members spoke about the absence of a presentation by SAPS, but I would like to broaden it in terms of all law enforcement agencies, but also the role of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in terms of minimizing or eradicating or addressing the issues of gender-based violence. I'll pause there. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I believe that we exhausted all the hands that were there. I've seen only 5 hands. Can we start responding to the questions or issues that has been raised by honorable members. Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, can you start?
Thank you, Chairperson. There was a question that related to taxi issues. I wish to indicate, Chairperson, that we need to start somewhere in terms of programmatic interventions that we have or we have planned. But in this instance, Chairperson, we were actually requested by women on several occasions during dialogues that the taxi issue should be addressed and should be dealt with as a matter of priority. In addition to that, the taxi industry itself, the associations, reached out to the department to seek assistance and requested us to enlist whatever support that we can provide to them in order for them to be able to tackle this issue of gender-based violence. So we were responding to that call, both from the women and from the taxi industry. The good thing is that the taxi industry itself was not defensive in this instance. They are the ones that acknowledge that there's a problem. Women are victims within the taxi premises. Inside the taxi itself, they don't reach their destination, some of them, or by the time you find them, it's already a body and you're no longer talking to somebody that is still alive. So by doing that, we saw it fit to work with 2 taxi industries. I think it's Santaco, the National Taxi Association as well. And we are targeting everyone within that industry from your taxi owners, taxi operators, marshals, the drivers themselves. That is the plan. But the difficulty with this industry is that when you provide this kind of training, it's not easy to get hold of them in one place at the same time. Some of them are on the road. Some of them are traveling long distances. So we've been doing our level best. We even went and would put up a tent in the taxi industry, I mean in the taxi rank itself. But getting hold of the taxi drivers, it's not an easy thing. We will continue to explore better ways because some of them even demand that you pay them for the time that they are with you for the 2 or 3 hours that they are not working and driving taxis. So it's an issue that we keep negotiating our space with them, but also indicating to them that they must come on board. One thing that we thought we could do was to look at working in partnership with development partners on how best we can even use the taxis themselves to brand them so that they too become our mobile, I forgot the name now for the posters, a mobile poster for lack of a better word. And they will, it's not only the people outside that will be reading and being sensitized, civil society broadly, but the very marshals and the very taxi drivers and owners will see it. It will be glaring in their face. However, issues of financing are impacting on us, and it's something that we are constantly discussing with the GIZ, which is a development partner in this area of work. So we'll do our level best to heed to your call. There was another issue around teenage pregnancy. I'll give it a bite and probably allow other relevant departments to come in. The medium-term strategic framework, the recent one that has been approved, assigned this responsibility to the Department of Health. But the Department of Women took the initiative to convene all the government departments and ensure that ultimately we come up with a program of action. It's still in its draft form, but at least it seeks to note what is it that is already in place from all the respective government departments, including the development partners. What is it that UNICEF is doing? What is it that UNFPA is doing? And all of that. We will be reaching out to UNAIDS as well, because there are issues that relate to HIV with respect to those children. So with that, we will be finalizing this and working closely with the Department of Health as the lead department to work out mechanisms in terms of the actual coordination now and how do we hold those departments responsible in terms of that implementation of the program of action. In a nutshell on teenage pregnancy, we've made a conclusion that because Gauteng spoke out, it doesn't mean the problem is only in Gauteng. We do believe that this is a national problem. We therefore wrote letters to the premiers of all the 9 provinces and have copied all the 9 MECs of the Department of Health. We have requested that we could kindly get statistics or data from their side as well to get a sense of what is the magnitude of the problem in all these provinces. We've also requested them to give us permission to access the information on those children. We want to assign social workers together with the Family and Child Protection Unit, the FCS unit, to actually visit and interview these children and establish who fathered these children. Is it their own peers? Or is it a close person in the family? Father, stepfather, uncle, a neighbor? So that the NPA unit can also work with us and come on board in this regard. The sooner we get that information and the cooperation from all the people that we'll be working with, the better for us so that we then go deeper and deal with this issue. I've also realized that the Department of Social Development is now working on a situational analysis initiative, which is also going to add value to the work that we are doing, Chairperson. So it's not an area that we have just left out. We have presented to the Director General's fora. They too are keen. They too are saying it's a matter that we need to address now that even State South Africa has released the statistics, and we should just look at what are those issues that are causing this problem, including issues of special development. You've seen Carte Blanche. You've seen what is happening in Alexander. So all of those issues, it's not only a social matter. It's a matter that affects some of the economic cluster as well, particularly issues around human settlement as well. So that's it from me, Chairperson, at a very high level around the issue of teenage pregnancy. And it is high on the radar of the department and the supporting departments, including the lead department of health. Thank you, Chairperson. If there's anything I've left out that relates to the department women, I can be reminded and I will still address it, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sis Shoki. DSD. DSD, Acting DG, are you there? Mandy, can you assist?
I will, Chair.
While we are moving on to Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, can you check DSD who will be responding for the questions?
We will.
Okay. Cooperative governance, can you please respond?
Thank you, Chairperson. We had two questions. I hope I'm audible. If I'm not, Sia will respond. On the on the disaggregation of beneficiaries, we will in the 2022-23 APP adjust the disaggregation from 2% to 7%. And then we'll also follow through on with the CWP implementing agents to prioritize these targets. And then on the invitation to members during the disengagement with the engagement to municipalities, we will then send the schedule to members and make certain then as we facilitate the training toward committees that they can also participate. Based on some previous questions that were also sent, you know, on the content of the programs, Chairperson, these we have also in the process of forwarding through to Parliament. Thanks so much, Chairperson and Honourable Members.
Thank you. National School of Government.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'm going to respond to the various questions from the honorable members, not necessarily in the order that they were asked. In terms of the cost of training and reducing costs for people in areas that cannot afford the training, I just want to quickly explain that the NSG doesn't have a budget for training. We operate on a cost recovery basis and the courses are demand driven. So it all depends on who comes to us and requests the training. So for example, the one with the taxi industry, if the Department of Women approaches us, they pay us for the training and we roll out the training for them. So we don't have the luxury of selecting who gets trained because departments take a decision in terms of whether they want to approach the NSG or not and who they select and whether their officials attend training. So if there are no-shows, what we do is if there are senior managers, for example, their department books for 20 officials to be trained, and only 10 pitch, immediately we get in touch with the departments and we say to them, look, you paid for the training. It's going to be fruitless expenditure if your officials don't attend. We don't have access to those officials. So it's an internal matter with the department for them to hold their officials accountable and make sure that they attend. We can blow the whistle and say, your people, so many of them, so and so hasn't attended, but it's very difficult for us to hold them accountable.
There are some courses that we offer for free. For example, our ethics online course is for free. The one on anti-discrimination is new. There's a possibility that that will be open and free as well. So if you go to the NSG website, you can actually see which are the courses that are open, the online courses that are open, and government officials are welcome to enroll for those courses. Also, if a department has funding from donors, for example, and they come to the NSG for funded training, they can actually select those who cannot afford training to benefit from our training programs. In terms of training of teachers, until now, the NSG was not responsible, was not a part of our mandate to roll out training of teachers. That was the mandate of basic education. However, increasingly, based on our niche areas, basic education is approaching us and saying, help us with a course on ethics for educators. So we have a course on ethics for educators, and that's being delivered to educators in we're doing it in partnership with the Matthew Goniwe school, and we are rolling it out for Gauteng. The Department of Basic Education also approached us to say, look, we have content for an anti-discrimination course. Can you help support us and capacitate us on getting it online? So our curriculum unit helped them with that. But most of the training for educators is delivered by the Department of Basic Education. With regard to a GBV training for judiciary, we would love to be able to train the judiciary, but there's a similar situation in terms of the Department of Justice has their own college called Justice College. So most of their training for the judiciary is run by Justice College. The honorable member, in terms of terminology with regard to hearing impairment and using the term deaf, that is well received and noted. I have to confess that sometimes we struggle with nomenclature. Sometimes we are told that this is the terminology that you will use, and when we use that, then we get conflicting information, but your comments are well received, and we will make the changes and the adjustments for the correct terminology to be used for deaf participants. With regard to backlog for certificates, I would like to apologize on behalf of the NSG. I am not aware of any backlogs. Perhaps there is some problem with this particular honorable member. My advice would be, if you can please, through Mandy, get in touch with me. Let us know the course that you attended, when you attended the course, and your ID number, and I will undertake to pass the information onto our assessment certification unit at the NSG, and we will undertake to investigate and look into what happened to your certificate and why it was not issued. In terms of the mitigation strategy, that recommendation was also well received. The mitigation strategy for non-attendance and the wrong people attending, and mostly women attending and men not attending, has to be, we would support that, but that mitigation strategy has to be developed within departments. And some departments already have that. For example, if in a department they pay for 20 participants and some people don't attend, the participants actually have to pay back the department because it becomes fruitless expenditure. So these are the mitigation strategies that some departments are adopting. But we cannot do that on behalf of departments. We can only supply departments with information saying your officials haven't attended. But departments need to hold their officials accountable
in terms of no-shows and those who were supposed to have attended training and they don't attend training. Similarly, departments have to also ensure that men get nominated within their departments by their training coordinators within their departments to make sure that men attend gender-based violence training and gender mainstreaming training. I think, unless I left out something, I think that covers all of the questions that were directed at the National School of Government. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Salga? Ms. Makanda, are you still there?
Yes, Chairperson. I'm sorry, I had a bit of a challenge with the network. Okay. The first question, Chairperson, in response, I appreciate the questions and indeed on one regarding the training. We have the first leg of the empowerment of women. We'll start with the general induction program for counselors. And then we're going to have focused, we're going to encourage women to attend on a focused approach the training program for NSG. And we're going to really popularize this so that women and even directors at municipal level participate in this training program, because gender mainstreaming and planning for GBVF is very critical. Then the second one, with the people with disabilities and LGBTQI, we have the SPU in municipalities is focusing on all the vulnerable groups, and in SALGA as well we have a working group that focuses on all the vulnerable groups. So we're doing work on all the vulnerable groups. So when we're talking about vulnerable, we include as well the persons with disabilities, and hence our partnership with the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities. We've taken note of the terminology in our presentations in terms of the emphasis on women instead of also vulnerable persons, and we're going to deal with that. And the women organizations in the municipal, the organizations that are gender focal points in the municipality, as indicated, need to really strengthen. What's my booklet? Need to really strengthen the coordination of each other's activities and work together. And we are hoping that the multi-party women caucuses in the legislatures as well is going to really assist us in ensuring that the multi-party women caucuses in municipalities, especially where municipalities opt not to appoint Section 79 committees, that at least we are going to get a SALGA that support, because we've been since 2011 trying to get municipal councils to have multi-party women caucuses as compulsory, but not all of them are having that uptake. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Mandy, did you manage to get hold of DSD?
Yes, Chair. DSD officials logged off, but the PLO said they will log on again, and I also forwarded some of the questions which were not captured.
Are you saying there is one who logged in now, or they are all logged off?
Yes.
Okay. Can the person respond to the question?
Good day, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Susan Mahamwe. The question on teenage pregnancy.
You are not audible. You are not audible.
Okay, let me try to move away. Can you hear me now, Chair?
No.
We are still not audible. Cesar, can you raise your voice?
Yes. Chair?
Yeah. Can you...
Okay. I'm saying, yes, as a department, we are contributing to address the challenges of teenage pregnancy. We are not working alone in the space. We are working with NGOs in the sector who are on the ground. For instance, we have signed partnership with Teddy Bear Clinic, Child Welfare, as well as Childline. We conduct awareness campaigns with them, and we also work with parents looking at strengthening their parental skills. So those are some of the initiatives that we have done with those NGOs to try and address the challenges in schools. And then the second question, which talks to how are we capacitating our frontline social workers to address issues of gender-based violence. There are three key things that we do. The first one, we conduct debriefing sessions. We have appointed service providers that are assisting us to intervene each time to ensure that the social workers that are dealing with all those traumatic cases, they do receive debriefing in order for them to manage the trauma that they are dealing with. The second intervention that we do, we also capacitate them. We are using an accredited training that capacitate them to deal with specialized advanced trauma counseling, so that they can be responsive better on issues of trauma. The third one that we also do for them, we have also organized training or capacitate them on LGBTIQ sessions so that they understand the language and they know how to respond and assist people who are coming from those communities. Yeah, so those are the three key things that we do as a department to support our frontline workers as well as intervene on teenage pregnancy. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've seen the hand of Thandaza S. I don't know whether it's a member or somebody want to add on something.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not a member. I'm from the Department of Traditional Affairs. There was a question that was raised around the role of traditional leaders in initiation schools. Chairperson and members, I must indicate that traditional leaders have an overall role in terms of initiation in their respective areas. And now we do have a legislation, which is Customary Initiation Act, which provides for the establishment of the national, it's called NIOC, it's National Initiation Oversight Committee, which is appointed by the minister, and that has been done, and that will be working closely with the PICC, which is Provincial Initiation Coordinating Committee, in ensuring that the issues of initiation are being dealt with. And we're hopeful that this legislation is now going to decrease, will enable the number of initiates that are dying to decrease, because each province will have to be vigilant on the ground and ensuring that there is adherence to the things that have to be followed. Like, for instance, there has to be registration of initiation schools, and if that has not been followed, there are also fines that is involved, which also include imprisonment. So with the enactment, with this act coming into operation, it is envisaged that there would be close monitoring on all these initiations that are happening, and also there would be lesser of these mushrooming initiation schools that are not legal, because in most of the time, that's where the deaths are occurring. But traditional leaders, there's no doubt they have got a role that they are playing in that regard. I thought Chairperson, I should just respond to that. But when, if at all there is something that has been missed out, our colleagues on the platform, they may add on what may have been missed out in my response. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for all the responses. Let me check. I see the hand of Matapelo again.
Thank you, Chair. I don't think that the Department of Social Development understood my question. My question was, some of these social workers are being harassed by officials, which is emotional abuse, which is something, it's a taboo to speak about emotional abuse. Nobody speaks about emotional abuse. And it's having a negative effect on their work to work with patients in rehab centers. What is the department or what is the plan? Is there any plan that social development has to deal with emotional abuse that some of these social workers are going through in rehab centers, not by the patients, but by the officials and their superiors in their respective rehab centers? That was my question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Matapelo. I think you also raised the issue of SAPS. But if my memory serves me well, SAPS were there in our last meeting, our last caucus. They did present. But we are still going to call other departments to come and present. With the issue of social development, since I'm also sitting in the Committee for Social Development, if there are cases like that, can you please let the social workers come out and write to the portfolio committee if they are failing to raise it with their superiors because they are the ones who are abusing them? Can they please write to the committee? Then we look into that. Thank you very much. If there's somebody from social development who can answer this, can also do that.
Thank you, Chair. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Oh, okay. Yes, Chair. Okay, thank you. Apologies for not responding to that question. In terms of the work that social workers are doing in the treatment centers, all the social workers that work in the treatment centers, they do have supervisors. The purpose of having the supervisors is to ensure that the supervisor supports them, intervene in cases where maybe cases need to be escalated. They also provide emotional support because it's not easy to deal with people that are addicted or affected by substances. So those are some of the interventions that we do. No social worker is allowed to work outside the supervision. The supervision is there as a safety net. It's there as a support mechanism to ensure that a social worker is properly supported. So in situations where social workers are exposed and do not have a supervisor, then the center, depending where the center then must link with the local office of social workers who will periodically go there and provide support. But by saying that, I'm not saying there are centers that are adequately supported. Some are supported, some are not. But the practice and the norm is that all the social workers must work under the supervision of a senior social worker so that they can be properly supported. And then there was a last question, Chair, that we also skipped the question that talks about the partnership with DBE in terms of addressing child abuse in schools. As a department, one of the strategies that we have developed in partnership with DBE is the anti-gangsterism and bullying strategy. We have prioritized those schools where there's a lot of incidences of bullying as well as gangsterism. So we've been implementing the strategy in those selected schools, and we have seen the results ever since we've intervened, because it's not once off, but it's a consistent campaign that we are doing. We are not in all schools, but we've just decided to be in those high-risk schools where we are implementing this program, and we are yielding the results, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, it's like they've dealt out with all the questions. And thank you for your contributions and your participation. I also want to extend my word of appreciation to all the ministers, the deputy ministers, the departments for the reports and the update that you has been given to us today as a caucus. Honorable members, it's like now we have come to the end of our meeting. If there are some other questions that honorable members need to raise with other departments, you can also do that by writing to the secretary of the caucus, Mandy, and then she will elevate the questions to the relevant department and will also get the responses from the department by writing. If it needs us to call them again, we'll do so. With these few words, honorable members, I just want to thank each one of us. Let's go and prepare ourselves for our next meeting or our sitting. Thank you very much. At the meeting again.
Madibongwe.
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 Siyabonga, Chair. Ralebogha, Chairperson.
Thank you.